What's up and welcome back to the TCP podcast. This is Tyler Clark with TC Performance, and I appreciate you guys for tuning back in real quick. You guys can rate this thing, review it, share it with somebody else. Really appreciate it. Now for this week, I'm excited to announce I got Drew Hanlon on a Zoom call for this episode. Super excited about it. We had a really good conversation. He didn't have a bunch of time, so I utilized the time that we had, tried to get through some questions, some important questions for coaches, for trainers, for athletes. And I thought it was a really good episode. Just to talk on the episode, talk on Drew a little bit. When it comes to trainers, basketball trainers in this industry, I think that objectively, a lot of you guys, including myself, can, you know, rank him as the GOAT or one of the best trainers in the world, because you can't really argue with his resume, right? He has multiple MVP caliber guys, all NBA, all-stars, everybody, just to name a few: Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, Zach LaVine, Brad Beal, Kelly Oubre, Semi Ojeleye, you know, like so many people, Tyrese Halliburton, Tyler Hero, so many individuals that he works with that he has genuinely helped get to the point in which they are, right? And it's you can't argue against what he's been able to do with his athletes. And the coolest part is that he's helped build them to that point since a young age. Like Brad Beal, you know, Kelly Oubre, Zach LaVine, Jason Tatum, they were all either high school or college level whenever he started to work with them. And then now look where they are now. Now he's starting to get guys like Tyrese Halliburton, Tyler Hero, where he met them in the league. And he's still increasing their game so much. So just wanted to pay tribute to him as a trainer. I really appreciate him taking some time out of his busy schedule to talk to me on this Zoom for this episode. And I think that he provides some really good value for you guys. Obviously, selfishly, I'm excited that I got to hear the information that he provided. And just a little bit more to touch on his training, right? I think that he's a good trainer. The way that he trains, the tools that he utilizes as a coach. But beyond that, I also want to talk about, I think the best thing that he does as a trainer at the level that he is the relationships that he builds. And he talks about in the episode a little bit, he was at Jason Tatum's house and his son Deuce, he was doing form shooting with him. And he's, you know what I mean? Like you don't hear a lot of trainers that integrated with their clients' families, the relationship that he's built with every single one of his guys, every single one of his clients, his athletes. It's a family. He calls it the Pure Sweat fam. Like they genuinely are all a family. So he's integrated with this athlete from them to their family, to their team, to their coaches, everything, right? He is a pivotal piece in their development, and he makes sure that he puts them and their family and the relationship that he has with them above all. Because I feel like the way that he's built relationships with these guys, you're not going to be able to get the trust that Drew Hanlon has unless you have the relationship. Like I said, yes, he's a very good trainer, and that kind of goes without saying. The tools and the ways that he increases and improves their game is phenomenal. But the relationship is something that they will never forget. He has a new podcast, and he has an episode out with Tyrese Halliburton. And in the grand scheme of things, I think they've only known each other for a couple months, and the way that they're talking to each other, just it seems like they've known each other for years. And that's another tribute to the relationships that Drew builds with his guys. So if you have a second, go listen to that podcast afterwards too. But just wanted to talk about that a little bit. I think one of the things that he does extremely, extremely well, besides just his actual approach to training, is the relationships that he builds. But I don't want to ramble on too much. I'm super thankful he was able to get some time out of his schedule to talk with me, and I'm extremely excited to get that out to you guys. So without further ado, Drew Hanlon. All right, welcome back to the TCP podcast. This is Tyler Clark with TC Performance, and I got Drew Hanlon on a Zoom call. Super excited for this. Drew, don't go too into depth, obviously, who you are if people don't know who you are living under a rock, but just want to give a quick breakdown of who you are, kind of what you're about, and just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, obviously people know some of the guys that I work with. You know, I'm fortunate to work with some of the top NBA players in the world. Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine, Tyler Hero, RJ Barrett, Tyrese Halliburton, Kelly Oubre Jr., the list goes on. But, you know, I've been with some of those guys since they were as young as 13 years old. And, Been with the majority of those guys before they started their NBA career. So it's been a fun journey, and it's a journey that we're still on, and trying to help them, reach their potential and get beyond, what they even thought was possible.
Yeah, absolutely. The resume definitely speaks for itself. And I kind of, the first thing that I wanted to get into was kind of, I've listened to podcasts and listened to you talk about your relationship with Brad, how it started when you guys were a lot younger in high school, and how your training was a lot different whenever you first started with Brad. Could you just kind of touch on things that have changed throughout your evolution as a coach, whenever you first started with Brad to now?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started with Brad, the story that people don't really understand is that we were working out together. I was still a high school basketball player. He was a high school basketball player. We were both from St. Louis. And believe it or not, I was better than him at that time just because I was 3 years older. We had just, we had won a state championship my senior year, his freshman year. And, we were, living in a gym together, and we were just doing workouts together. But at that time, it wasn't like I was studying the game to be a trainer or to use the most efficient or effective techniques. While I wanted those things, really all I was doing, because there wasn't like ways you could study the game. YouTube had just started. There weren't like I couldn't go in and search Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant workouts like you can today of some of your, the top NBA players. And so really what it was, I'd see Michael Jordan's highlights and or Dwayne Wade's highlights or Allen Iverson highlights or whoever the players that we wanted to kind of be like, and we would just go work on their top moves. And so while it did polish up our footwork, it did, we got a ton of shots up. We were working like 3 hours a day. It helped us, shoot the basketball well just because we were putting in the work. And then it also helped us, master our footwork and movements. There was a lot of time where we were working on things that maybe necessarily weren't as practical. Me shooting half spin fadeaways probably wasn't the best thing at 5'11". And there were times where, Brad was doing some skills that might be something that he used once or twice a year, but it wasn't worth kind of spending time on. And so, that's how we started out, was just randomly working on our favorite players' moves and skills. And now everything is just very strategic. We're trying to add elements to their game. We're trying to, polish up different aspects of what they already do well. And, it's definitely a lot more strategic nowadays, where we're making sure that everything that they do in games is worked on before the game so that they feel comfortable doing it when they're out there on the court when it matters most.
Yeah, absolutely. To go off of that, you take an approach pretty much every offseason, from my understanding, where you basically isolate one thing with these guys or women that you work with, and that you want to improve and add to their game. So where does that approach come from, and why one thing? What is your mentality for that?
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, the old school saying of, like, if you try to catch two rabbits, you're not going to catch either one. It's one of those things that, it's why people shoot right-handed or left-handed. They don't shoot both hands. It's why baseball pitchers, they throw right-handed or left-handed. They don't throw both-handed. It's why quarterbacks throw right-handed, not throw right-handed and left-handed. It's why a lot of the best pitchers in the world can't even hit a baseball, because they just focus so much on doing what the team needs them to do well, which is strike guys out and get batters out. So, my approach really is all about depth over width. And depth is going deeper in the skills that really matter. And obviously we want to expand their game. We want to, go wide as well. But I see a lot of players that make the mistake of they work on everything and they don't improve on anything. And, we try to focus on improving on something, one of the best possible play can be in the short period of time that we have.
For sure. And then my next question to that, what would be your approach, or what is your approach basically, whenever you're trying to improve that one skill or just expand on that one skill? How do you maintain the other things? Like I'm sure an outsider would think, oh, well, he's gonna lose it if he doesn't work on that. How do you maintain the skills that you've already worked on with them?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that maybe I've understated, is that we continue to work on the things that they already do well. It's just that our focus on adding, we're not trying to add a million new things. We're not trying to add a bunch of new skills. Like, for instance, like Jason Tatum this summer really wanted to focus on driving and finishing. So that was our emphasis. So we break the summer into three phases. Phase one is add. Phase two is develop. And then phase three is compete. Add means, like, the first, I don't know, third of the summer, all we were doing is working on the new skills. We were working on the driving, we were working on the posture, we were working on his handles, we were working on the touch, we were working on the floater, we were working on the finishing. Then phase two came, and now it's like, okay, whatever we've got in our bag at this point, we got to continue to develop. But if you haven't been able to, after, you know, a month in the summer, if you haven't been able to add it to your game, it probably means we're going to move on to a different, kind of move on, because if it takes more than a month to develop, probably not going to be, we don't, we're not going to have enough time to really master it by the time the season starts. And so then we, you know, pick the things that we do think we've added to the game. We continue to work on those. We continue to work on his catch and shoots, his off the dribbles, his mid post, his mid range, all the stuff that he does so well. And then phase three is compete. And in the compete sector, we're adding live bodies. We're adding NBA defenders, so he can try to use that stuff in live simulated stuff, so that he makes sure that he has practice against the guys that he's going to use it in the games. And then that's where we're also making tweaks and adjustments, so that we can make sure that we're fine-tuning everything before the season actually starts.
No, I love that model. I like that a lot. I'm curious to hear your thoughts too. Obviously, you work with a lot of super high level people worth millions of dollars. Are you ever apprehensive to add like live defenders or even interns, whoever, into a workout with these high level athletes because you don't want to injure them or any like, are you ever apprehensive to do live stuff with them?
No, I mean, obviously we like guys like Tyler Herro and RJ Barrett. Those guys are on contract years this year, the summer, and we knew they were signing, you know, $100 million plus deals, in July. So we're not competing until after they sign those deals. But yeah, you know, I mean, that's part of anything. You know what I mean? You can get hurt in a car, and I'm in a car right now. You can get, you know, hurt on a plane, and we take planes all the time to travel all over the world. So I don't think we really worry about that. I mean, there's obviously times where, I coach up guys and make sure that they understand that, you know, our job as defenders and interns and whatever is to help them get better. So that means when we're contesting shots, making sure we're not sliding under their feet, making sure, when we're banging with them, you know, as they drive, when they jump, we're getting out of their way. You know, it's simulated. It's not full on, like, you know, competing as 100%, but once the NBA guys go against each other, it's all 5-on-5. You know what I mean? But I think it's necessary to fully improve, and so you have to embrace competitiveness. You have to embrace, the aspect of just straight competing.
No, I can't agree more. Obviously, I've never worked with guys of that caliber, but I was just curious from your perspective if that's ever been an issue. To kind of go back to the three-phase model that you mentioned, where do you feel like that compete phase, do you feel like that's where you see the most strides with these guys, or is it any of the three
I think
really?
it's a sequential phase. You know what I mean? You have to improve and add the new skill if you ever want to be able to develop it. You have to develop it and master it before you can use it, and then you have to use it so that it actually becomes part of your game. So I think they just all flow together, to be honest with you.
Fair enough. So in the ad phase and the other phases, of course, but what are some tools that you utilize as a coach to, you know, improve these skills, introduce these skills, make things stick? Like, what are some tools that you use as a coach to help these athletes?
First thing is film, obviously, just showing them, because a lot of people are visual learners. Second thing is demonstrating, because again, they're visual learners. Third thing is breaking it down so that we can build it up, so that they can understand the aspects of each, skill that we're adding, so that if they understand all the elements, then when they put it together, it's a lot easier for them to fully grasp. Then the other thing is just breaking down the nuances, the little micro skills, so that they understand all the ins and outs, all the little details that are going to make the difference. Then it's just about repping each portion out, little parts out. Then it's about building it up to the whole, repping out the whole. And then again, adding dummy defenders so that they can start feeling it and seeing it. And then they, go live so that they can actually start doing it and implementing it, which is important.
Right, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. So I kind of want to move forward to the mentality of these guys that you work with. A lot of your players are either MVP caliber athletes, all-star athletes, all NBA. Is there like a commonality in their mentality that you see with these great players? Is there something that just you can take from their mentality and give to your general pop or an average high school player and just be like, hey, This is what Jason Tatum has. This is what Brad Beal has if you want to be at that next level.
And I think they've all developed it over time, and I think they're continuing to develop. You know what I mean? I think that's the biggest thing. It's not only their skills, but it's mentality. It's, you know, them believing in themselves, them having confidence, them, you know, like one of the big things is weathering the storms. Like, you see a lot of these guys when they're rookies or early in their careers, they have a bad game, they almost feel like they're a bad player. And whereas these superstars understand that, like, in an 82 game season, let's say they sit out 10 of them, you know, if they're playing 72 games, 10 games they're going to have great games. 10 games are going to have really poor games. And then the rest of the games, you know, the 52 games, they're going to just be solid. And that's a season, you know, but 10 of those games are going to be really bad. And those bad games don't mean you're a bad player. And so I think that's the mentality, is just like, keep shooting, you know, shoot through the slumps. You know, obviously you're trying to make tweaks and adjustments if there's things that are causing the slumps, but shoot through those slumps. You know, keep playing hard. Don't let, you know, a bad play turn into a bad, you know, quarter, which turns into a bad game. And just like, you know, I think weathering the storm is the biggest thing that those guys have, the ability to just stay confident. What we call unbreakable faith. Like, their faith never breaks in themselves. They just continue to believe in themselves regardless how good or bad, you know, that night's going.
Yeah, absolutely. Being confident throughout those phases, like you said, is huge. I'm curious, what is your role whenever those things happen? Obviously, it's going to be different for different people. They have different personalities, but what is your role generally whenever one of your guys is going through something, or you feel like you need to step in and maybe be a voice for them? What is your role?
That's what I spend the majority of my time doing, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm breaking down film. I'm providing feedback for him after every game. But, you know, just 2 days ago, you know, Jason, you know, he scored 35, but he was, I think, 4 for 14 from three or something like that. He's like, man, my three's falling. You know, nights like tonight will be 50. He's like, is there any way you can get to Boston? So I fly to Boston. We make one change on his jump shot. We obviously talk about it. And then he goes for 49 last game. You know what I mean? And I was like, well, you said you were good for 50. Like, you're right there. So, you know, I just left the gym with Tyler Hero. You know, he's got a game tonight. Most players, high school players, you know, would say, oh, I'd never work out on a game day. Then I'd be tired. Yet you have an NBA player that, you know, just won Sixth Man of the Year and just got paid hundreds of millions of dollars that is working out on a game day because he's like, hey, I want to get my swagger back. You know, he had a hand injury that he's playing through, and he's got his hand wrapped up, and he's like, you know what? I don't have confidence with this wrap on my hand yet, so I'm going to shoot until I do have confidence with it. So I think that's just the thing that makes him special, is that, you know, when there are moments like that, they're not afraid to reach out for help. And then we just kind of keep working on both the mental aspect and, you know, if there is a tactical aspect to make the changes that they need to get the results that they want.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's awesome. Obviously that you've built the trust with these guys to where they can just be like, hey, all right, come out, need you to help me. And then to kind of go off of that, how cool is it for you to be courtside seeing, you know, guys that you've worked with for years now go 49 and constantly see that on a nightly basis? That must be a surreal experience for you.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. Like, I, you know, there's a lot of times where I don't really flash back, and kind of, I'm still in it. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's going to be one day where I look back and I'm like, wow, that was really fun. Like, you know, I work with the majority of the Eastern Conference All-Stars, and, you know, to like shape a whole decade worth, you know, of an East, like one of the two conferences, is pretty crazy to think about. You know, growing up, you know, for birthday presents, I'd get one ticket to an NBA game, and my Christmas present was the flight to the game. And for now, you know, now I get paid to go to NBA games. It's just a whole different, you know, kind of surreal experience. But it's weird. It's, the cool factor is completely gone. Like, I don't think of it as cool. Like, when I'm at a game, I'm there to do a job. I'm there to find ways for them to get even better. And, you know, it's, Tyrese Haliburton and I were laughing the other day because he had a monster night. You know, they hit a game winner against the Lakers. He had, I don't know, I think it was 22-14-5 or something like that. And after the game, I was like, oh man, on that play, you should have done that. On that play, he's like, damn, I can't celebrate it. And I'm like, that's just how my mind goes. You know, it's just constantly on how can we get you guys better. So it's a lot of fun on those special nights. You know, the other night was really fun watching him just have his swagger back and drop 49. But you know, that's my mind always navigates towards, hey, you have a job to do. Your job is to push them beyond where they could have pushed themselves. And so I kind of don't have an off switch when it comes to that mentality.
No, for sure. And that makes a lot of sense. But I think it's good that, you know, you said it's kind of in the now. So you don't always take a step back and look in the past necessarily. It's probably best that you're in the now figuring out, you know, how to optimize your position with these guys. So I like that a lot. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about is whether it's in the off season or in season, with like whatever time of year, the communication aspect with not only the athletes, you kind of touched on that, but with the coaching staff too, and kind of what they're expecting from, say, Jason Tatum, Brad Beal, whoever. Obviously, whenever you're with a guy that's been with an organization for a pretty long time, I'm sure you have a pretty good understanding after communicating. But say a guy who's moving around different teams, how big is that piece in the equation, communicating with the actual association, the organization, and the coach about what their role is?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, one of the things that I always tell people is you got to rally the troops. You know what I mean? You got to get everybody in that circle on the same page. That's parents, that's, you know, girlfriends, wives, that's agents, that's managers, that's the coaching staff, that's the front office. You want everybody in that player's ear to be pushing them and pulling them and guiding them in the same direction. And so it's a disservice to the player if everybody has their own opinions. And you know, I never understand when coaches hate trainers or trainers hate coaches, because I'm like, listen, in an ideal world, everybody's moving that player in the same direction. And the more people you can have that player trusts, you know, positively pushing them and pulling them in the direction that we all know is best for that player, it should be a win-win. So, yeah, I'm really close with all the coaches that my players play on. We're in constant communication. We're sharing ideas. I'm leaning on them. They're leaning on me. And together, we're all in the background. You know, that's the big thing that I always realize is, like, I always say, like, I'm like the GPS. Like, you know, the player tells us where they want to get to, and it's my job to navigate and you know, and put together the most efficient and effective roadmap. Probably not, you're not get there, but if everybody's just in a car riding in the same direction, you know, now you have a better chance. And then when that player gets off path, we all can yell, hey, detour, detour, get back on path. But you know, the player driving the car, you don't want anybody else pulling at the wheel. And I think that's the best analogy to kind of, you know, make sure that everybody realizes everybody should let the player kind of do what they want to do. But hopefully all of us are encouraging them to do the things they need to do, not the things that they just want to do.
Absolutely. I like that analogy a lot. And then one of the last couple of things that I wanted to ask was take basically a step back from NBA athletes, because I know you do a lot of clinics, you work with youth athletes still. Is there, you know, a separation in your training philosophies or approaches with a youth athlete? Whereas obviously when you're as skilled as you are at the NBA level, there's certain things, certain details that will help you get a little bit better. But with an athlete, is it more of a general skill approach, or is it still, we should hone in on one skill at a time?
I still build it up. I mean, it was funny last night, you know, Jason's 4-year-old son, Deuce, we were working on form shooting in his room with one hand. Like, we finally implemented it. And before he went to sleep, you know, he was like, I was like, dude, what we're working on today, he's like, my follow through. It's like, for a 4-year-old to think about form shooting and follow through, that's pretty crazy. But no, I build up athletes the same exact way. You know what I mean? A lot of these guys, when I started out with them, I worked on one skill over and over again. Like Joel Embiid, it was a fadeaway, or, you know, Jason, it was the jab step, or, you know, Brad, it was a step back. So, like, we all had like one thing and then build from it. I think the biggest thing, though, is with kids, you just got to make sure that you understand, you know, that they have all the fundamentals they need before you start, you know, specializing. You know what I mean? Like, at the NBA level, you might have a guy like a, you know, a Kyle Korver or a JJ Redick or one of those type of guys that they're a shooter. So you don't work on their ball handling as much, or you don't work on their finishing as much. Whereas, you know, as a youth athlete, you got to make sure that they can finish with both hands. They can dribble, they can stop and start, they can defend, they can make good decisions. Once they have those fundamentals, then it allows you to kind of start honing in on the skills that will really make them the most impactful player based on their body, their athleticism, and opportunity, you know, with the teams that they're playing on.
That makes a lot of sense. A foundation obviously needs to be set before you specialize in too many things.
100%.
Right. So yeah, I like that answer. So the, just like a fun question, has there ever been like one person, any part in your career that's like walked into the gym while you were training, where you were just like starstruck?
walked in the gym where you don't even, I didn't even know they were coming. They just like, popped in. But Michael Jordan's the only person I've ever been starstruck. We got to golf, at Grove 23, which is his golf course, and got to spend a day with him. That was the only one just because I grew up idolizing him.
No, for sure. I think that kind of speaks for itself. And then the last thing that I wanted to ask is, a trainer at your caliber, at where you're at, what are some resources? Who are some trainers that you might learn from? What? How are you learning yourself? How are you continuing to grow at the level that you're at?
Film, film, film. I mean, I pick the brains of my clients who, are at the highest level. I pick the brains of a bunch of NBA coaches, and then just watching film and reverse engineering what's working for the best players in the world, and trying to learn why they're the best players in the world, and then create strategies to be able to teach my players the most efficient and effective way to add those things that I'm learning on film or from some of those coaches or players that I'm fortunate to be around.
For sure. Everybody go watch some more film. But all right, dude, I don't
Yeah,
want to take too much more of your time. I really appreciate it. If there's anything that you want to plug away, go ahead. I know you have a lot of different platforms out there.
no, I mean, like I said, I love that you're doing this kind of stuff, just sharing stuff. So if they have anything, they can always check me out on social media and I've got a ton of resources that they're out there, and then also some paid ones on the website. But I think it's great that you're picking the brains of a bunch of people and sharing all this knowledge elsewhere.
Absolutely. No, it's been a fun journey for myself as well. And it's cool to be able to talk to people like yourself. Drew, I appreciate your time, man. I really do.
Awesome. Appreciate you, my man.